And that's when I said, you shouldn't be this excited about candy. Welcome to episode 265 of the McSauce Comic Book Podcast. My name is Paul McGinty. With me, as always, are Ian the Sauce Sharpley.
Hello.
That's Ian the Sweet Tart Sharpley.
Ian the Snickers Sauce Sharpley.
And Matt the Milky Way Casale.
You were going to say Milky Way.
Surprise.
Candy Talk.
It is Monday night, January 14th. And tonight we are going to bring you all the sweet saccharine goodness of Candy Talk. We're probably going to talk potential comic books and TV series of 2019, but there's a good chance we sneak candy into this episode as much as we possibly can. But before we do comic slash candy talk, we do housekeeping with the keeper of the sweet shop, Ian Sharpley.
Not a lot of candy on McSauce.com. I think I might have made a strip about a Zero Bar once a long, long time ago. That great, great white chocolate and almond and nougat.
Ooh, is that what's... No.
That's,
is,
yeah,
that
that's,
what, is that what's in it?
White chocolate, almond, nougat. Oh, delicious.
Man. I don't know.
Don't at me out there, no, McSauce casters. What's your favorite fucking candy bar, huh?
Certainly not the Zero Bar. There's a reason it's called the Zero Bar, not the Hero Bar.
You can find our... You can have that candy conversation a number of ways with us, actually. You can go to our Facebook fan page, our Instagram page, Twitter, YouTube, bunch of comment sections. You can write in, you know, Snickers against Milky Way, against Reese's Pieces. Whatever you want to do, go ahead. You can list all those on any of our social medias. You can listen to the podcast a number of different ways. Podomatic, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Odyssey One is the home of our, it's our internet radio home, where you can hear the podcasts new a couple of days before they drop on our regular feed. So we air classic episodes weeknights at 10 p.m., so check us out on odysseyone.com. I think we have that posted on all of our social media accounts as well, so you can,
yep,
if you're at a loss at where to find our radio show, just hit us up on all those socials that I mentioned before. If you're looking for some new t-shirts, some new swag, go to tpublic.com. We have the new Theater Justice t-shirt up there, as well as the classic three-headed McSauce t-shirt. And finally, we are going to be doing in with Spitfires, catering services, and maybe some other of our friends, not all confirmed yet. We're going to be doing another tailgate, the Geekman Tailgate 4.0 Star Wars Night at PNC Park on May 4th, 2019, down at PNC Park. I don't know who is actually playing the Pirates on that day, but it is Saturday. It is 3 p.m. to 10 p.m., so come down early. We're going to have the grill set up. We're going to have some food. We're going to be playing some games down there. Our good, good friend Jeremy Canal sets all of this up, so you can go to our page. It's pinned to the top of the McSauce Facebook page, and you can also find it. I'll try to put it out on all of our other social media accounts, and you can order your tickets in advance for the day through a link that Jeremy has set up that will be on the advertisement resting on our page. So you can just fill out the information. Jeremy will take care of getting the tickets. It'll cover your food. It'll also cover drinks if you're over 21, you know what I'm saying? So,
or even if you're not over 21, we won't tell.
Well, it'll cover your food, drinks, and candy. So just fill out the information on the page, and we hope to see you in a galaxy far, far away, or PNC Park.
If whatever. It's a deal breaker, they're playing the Oakland A's. Ooh. That weekend. What's nice about this year is that it's a Saturday. I think the last couple years were weekdays.
Like Tuesday nights.
Yeah, and that's a bitch. Who wants to go tailgate for the Pirate game and get blasted on a Tuesday? We did, absolutely, because we're dedicated.
I think a couple years ago it was during game 6 or game 7 of the Penguins playoff series. Mm-hmm. So I guess there might be a chance of that again, but hey, It's going to be a beautiful Saturday. Come on down to PNC Park and hang out with your boys. Talk some comics, some Star Wars, some candy, whatever
you're
you want
still
to
mad about Ian loving the Zero Bar and you're holding on to that for 5 months.
Yeah, come fucking yell at me about
it. Bring it to the park. So it is January 2019. There's a whole year ahead of us. There's a whole year of movies and comic books and TV, tons of comic book properties and all kinds of various media. I'm sure there will be some Marvel candy bar tie-in around Infinity War.
I mean, when isn't there?
Shouldn't there be an Infinity Bar? That sounds like it should be a thing.
That
right?
does sound like a good. What would be in an Infinity Bar? What would it be like? Shape? It could be like a pretzel shaped, much like the Infinity logo. Ooh.
It would have. It's a. It's got like little hard shell candies. Like a red one and a yellow one and a green one and a blue one, right?
On like, so are you picturing like Snickers like, shape with five candies down the middle?
Like M&M's. As the gems.
This could be a cross candy dimensional hookup. You got M&M's, you got Snickers. Are those the same brand?
I think Mars makes Snickers. Who makes M&M's?
I think M&M's is also Mars, yeah. So we could do this, yeah.
So, I mean, we're just making this happen Marvel style. We're just bringing all the different heroes of the Mars universe.
Right, bringing them all together to fight the ultimate enemy, your hunger.
actually, tying candy bars into comics, for the last maybe 6 months, DC has been running Snickers... You're not yourself until you have a Snickers ads.
Mm-hmm.
And they're getting current comic book artists to draw the pages. And it's a pain in the ass when you turn a page in a comic book and you land on one of these ads because it looks like a comic book page. And all of a sudden you're reading a book that the Flash hasn't been in. And all of a sudden you're like, why the fuck is the Flash fighting Gorilla Grodd in this book? And then you're like, oh, that's because it's a little kid that's hungry. So he's turned into Gorilla Grodd, and Flash needed
How
to cram
witty.
A Snickers down his mouth.
You turn into Doomsday, and you give him a Snickers. Very nice. Very nicely done, DC.
Yeah, I mean, good work. You know, real good artwork and writing for these Snickers ads. But, man, what a chafe and what a hiccup when you're trying to smoothly read a comic book.
Oh, my God. I can't imagine how that must be disjointing to your... To your leisure, like reading, as you're sitting there reading a comic book, and they're like, "Does it fly when you hit the ad? Does the comic fly out of your hands, Paul? Is it that rough of a ride
I
for you?"
I have enough trouble remembering what happens from you know, like book to book in comics. I don't need page to page fucking up my game. I missed an entire issue of Wonder Woman last month. Didn't even realize it.
Yeah, ooh,
I missed. Yeah, I picked up the latest issue, and I was like. I don't remember Steve Trevor meeting Aphrodite last book, but I was like, I guess I'm dumb and just don't remember. Whenever I was putting them away, I was like, oh, I missed a complete issue. Now that confusion makes sense.
I feel like I'm having a harder time remembering storylines and things month to month. Where whenever I was a kid, it would be easy. I could remember what happened in the X-Men or X-Force. But now, I don't know if it's just because I'm an adult and I got more stuff going on, or if our pop culture memories have been just smushed in, much like the news cycle, things just stay in your mind for like a minute and then they're gone. Like, I can't remember anything anymore.
Were you reading more then or more now?
That's a great question because I probably read more now, but I do it at a different pace where I think I was a more steady reader then, but I will binge now.
Yeah.
Where I'll just take a Saturday night and I'll read like a month's worth of different books from all over the spectrum.
Maybe that's why you're cramming so much information like into your brain at one big sit down. Like you're not spreading it out and, you know, like pacing yourself.
Maybe. I don't know.
I think it probably resonated more with you back then, though.
And, probably. And
you just thought it was like the coolest shit you had ever experienced, whereas now it's just like, there's just so much of it. It's hard for something to stand out. But those were your formative comic reading years. Those are the ones that you really remember. I mean, you could probably go to your earliest part of your comic book collection and be like, I remember when I bought this. I remember Absolutely, where I was. Yeah. But like, if I go and I grab like random comic book, you know, Batman that came out last year, you don't remember buying that.
Yeah. I think it was just because it was such a foundational experience and something that was, it was beginning a trend where it's not just, I've been doing this for so many years and now it's just old hat at this point.
Right.
But enough old comic talk.
Let's talk about the future, Ian. Like, as in the year 2019.
So we scoured the internet to find some of the most anticipated comic books of 2019 because off the top of our head, I don't think that we anticipated anything, or I know I personally didn't have anything that I've been waiting for the past couple of years. And we've done the same segment, I think, for the past probably 3 years. And I think I kind of had an inkling of, like, oh, I think last year I knew that Doomsday Clock was coming out. And that was something that I was going to be interested in. But this year, there's just, like, absolutely nothing that off the top of my head I thought, yeah, that's the thing that I'm going to run out and get. And after doing some research, there are a couple things that I found that look kind of cool, but nothing really is blowing my doors off. Nothing looks like it's going to be like the great story of this year. Whereas last year, I think White Knight came out last year, and it was something that I was like, oh, that could be really cool. And Doomsday Clock looked like something that I would enjoy.
This latest Umbrella Academy arc should wrap this year. So I get those in trades. So I'll get that trade. So that's something I can look forward to this year. We looked through a handful of lists for upcoming comics for this year, and none of us were jumping out of our seats for anything. If I had to pick one book to really be excited about, it came out last week. It's the Bendis Patrick Gleason Young Justice book. Mm-hmm. There's a couple other books with that new Bendis Wonder Comics imprint that are going to be coming out over the next couple months that seem pretty cool. I'm going to get that new Naomi book. I forget who the artist is in it, but the art looks really neat. I guess it's Jamal Campbell. The art looks really good. There's a preview of it in the back of this Young Justice issue. And Wonder Twins, the new Wonder Twins book looks neat. I'm a sucker for kind of this is kind of a YA, themed imprint that Bendis is doing, and that's right up my alley. You know, me of Pretty Little Liars fame.
You do like your YA genre.
I do. Well, the other YA book coming out later this year is in April, Mira Tidebreaker.
Mm-hmm.
Written by Daniel Page and drawn by Stephen Byrne. I feel like I had seen Stephen Byrne's artwork before. It is gorgeous. If any of you saw the After the Snap, like one page comics on Twitter or Instagram, where like it shows, you know, like Cap and Black Widow coming back to the castle and like Shuri asking where Black Panther is and. Mm-hmm. A bunch of different like one page panels, like they're one single issue pages that he did. Really, really good artwork, really good emotion in those stories. Those kind of took off, and I guess he's been doing a lot of comic work. But I just started following him on Twitter, and like his art's right up my alley. I think it's really good. So he's been promoting this Mira book, and hopefully it's cool. Like I love the cover of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be some young fun YA material, but I think it'll have a lot of heart to it.
You love your young fun.
I love Mira too. Like Mira's a really cool character that I like that she's gotten a bigger role in Aquaman books over the last few years.
I'd say the one thing that kind of jumped out to me, I read Black Hammer. It's a book from, it's a Dark Horse book. Jeff Lemire writes it. It's about a sort of like a analog of a Justice League, Justice Society style team. And they save the city that they protect, Spiral City, from the anti-god. But in doing this, they have to basically exile themselves to this sort of like Twilight Zone farm for all eternity. And they can't leave this town, this small town in this farm. And some heroes adapt to this better than other ones. And it's a real strange kind of, if you know Jeff Lemire, and he writes weirdness and like science fiction and space stuff really well.
Jeff Lemire does. He's got so many gears. Like, if you tell me you're reading a Bendis book, I'm going to, just by I'm reading a Bendis book, I'm going to know what kind of book you're reading. But Jeff Lemire has, like, so many, you know, so many knives in his switchblade that, like, who knows what the fuck that book is going to be about.
It's, sometimes it's a straight superhero take. Sometimes it's real, like, 1950s science fiction, weird, like, Tales to Astonish kind of stuff. Sometimes it's,
you,
like...
You're just talking about the Black Hammer
I'm talking
issues?
About the original Black Hammer stuff that I've been reading in this year.
Like, he's doing two more arcs. There's like the Dark Age and the Something Else Age.
The Golden Age is the one that's coming out in March. So it's Black Hammer 45, which goes back to 1945 and covers so the classic team whenever they were actually a functioning team.
Are those coming out as singles? I see shit in my Twitter feed about Black Hammer all the time, but I never bothered to research what it was, and you're the first person that I've ever met that reads Black Hammer.
The living, breathing truth. Yeah. Well... The artist on it, Dean Ormston, I believe, had some kind of problems with... I don't know if he had... He had some kind of physical problem where he had to teach himself how to, like, redraw things or something. And I don't know if it was at the beginning of this or they had already gotten the book started where he kind of had to relearn how to do stuff again. So I know there have been a bunch of delays with the regular Black Hammer title, and I don't believe that he is doing Black Hammer 45. I think they have some other people.
There's a different artist on it.
Matt Kynt.
Yeah.
And his wife, I'm assuming, Sherilyn. So, yeah, from didn't he write that Valiant book that we all like?
The Valiant thing?
Valiant. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I didn't know he could draw, so this will be interesting.
Speaking of Jeff Lemire, him and Dustin Nguyen they're going to start releasing Ascender this year. It's the continuation of Descender.
Space book, right?
Space book, Robot Wars book. Really.
Right up your alley.
Really cool. And I'm going to get Ascender. Like, I trust those artists. We were talking about how much I love Patrick Gleason's work earlier before we started recording. And, like, I'm a sucker for the combo of Jeff Lemire and Dustin Nguyen. So this book is going to be a lot different. It's going to be more about like magic. And because I guess during Descender, it's, you know, big sci-fi space robot wars book where like magic was wiped out of the universe. But after like this, after the big happenings at the end of Descender, magic starts to like reform. And like this is going to be, you know, Ascender is going to be more about, you know, how magic's like re-entering the universe. Sounds bonkers, but I trust those guys. But kind of like, so Scott Snyder and Sean Murphy a few years ago did The Wake. Mm-hmm. The first six issues were incredible. It was, you know, these sea creatures attacking an underwater marine base. It was an amazing horror thriller book.
Yeah, it was What If Abyss, or plus
What If
Black Lagoon.
Yeah, it was amazing. But then the second arc of the story takes a jump way into the future where these sea creatures rule everything. Half of the continents have fallen into the ocean. Everyone's on like flying ships to live. and it just got bonkers. And I'm kind of afraid Ascender is going to be like that, because you really get invested in a lot of the characters in Descender, but it makes this huge jump, because at the very end of Descender, you see like where Ascender is going to be going. And I don't think I'm going to see any of those characters again. Yeah. Like, you get one of the characters and his daughter, and I'm like, oh, like, I really got attached to some of those characters, but I'm going to get it. Check it out. Dustin Wynn does the whole thing in watercolors. Beautiful, beautiful book. Like, it's one of those books I look at and I'm like, why do I even try to do artwork?
Matt, you got anything over there? You've been awful quiet.
You know, there's not a whole lot this year that, as of right now, that's been announced has me super buzzed. Couple things I want to get caught up on. I'm significantly behind on Spider-Man, but I want to get caught up on that. That seems to be pointed in a really, really positive direction. I'm going to check out the Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man title as well. I think Detective Comics number 1000 might be a fun issue. I kind of enjoyed Action Comics number 1000, so given that I prefer Batman over Superman, I would think that I will enjoy that even more, hopefully. And, you know, that's the best I can hope for at this point with Batman, or some cool little one-off stories, because I generally don't care for the overall direction of the comic book that Tom King is writing. And from what I understand, man, did that guy, like, destroy a lot of his goodwill with that fake out with the Batman wedding. Spoilers, he didn't get married.
I don't think he did.
You think that everybody is fine with that? Because I've heard that sales have actually taken a hit.
Oh, really?
Well, from some comic book store owners, yeah.
Did
people want Batman to get married? Like,
some comic book readers I've spoken to are still getting it, even though...
Names!
This whole time, they're like, yeah, I don't know about this, but it's all right. I'm still going to get it. I fucking hate Tom King's guts. I don't hate Tom King's guts. I hate his writing. I don't get anything by Tom King.
I thought you still got Batman for a
while. Oh, I stopped. Yeah. I stopped that forever ago. I've said this before on the show. He did an arc called The War of Jokes and Riddles.
Yeah, you said that all the action happens off panel and
right.
Yeah.
Michael Janin was the artist on it. Michael Janin?
Did we change his last name every single
time?
There's
an accent over the I. It's Janin. He's foreign. Come on, Ian. Be a little sensitive.
I know he's foreign, but I believe that we changed his name every time we talk about him. All the big fights and everything happen
off panel. It was so disappointing. He's using that ridiculous Scott Snyder, Greg Capullo created Joker where he's got a big question mark scarred into his chest. He wears an open dress shirt down to his belly button. He's fucking roided out like crazy. It's trash city. I wouldn't eat one candy bar from that universe. The trash bar is what they sell in the Tom Kingiverse.
What's in the trash bar?
Yeah,
maggots.
I think it speaks for itself. Trash.
I feel like it's made up of that thing in Fraggle Rock, that like that pile of trash.
Oh.
What was that thing?
I forget what it was called.
You remember it though. Mm-hmm. So, other than that, maybe Detective will continue to be pretty decent. I've read a couple of the more recent ones since they kind of got away from like that team that existed when they did the rebirth of Detective, where like Clayface was one of the heroes or something. I'm like, what the fuck am I reading? It feels like the last few issues of Detective have actually been more like in line with Batman. So hopefully that'll continue.
Because now Detective's Peter Tomasi and Doug Monkey.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you're gonna have to bring those over so I can read them.
Okay.
I mean, I'm also a sucker for Tomasi and Monkey. I don't know why I haven't jumped right on that.
It's cool too because it's leading up to 1,000, so maybe there will be a payoff. I don't know, but anyway, I'm also kind of looking forward to Valiant has the Eternal Warrior coming back this year, which is kind of exciting. We haven't really seen him since the events of the Valiant, when he was unable to protect the Geomancer from Mr. Flay.
Mr. Flay was such a cool ass character.
Yeah,
I always liked him. Now the Eternal Warrior. I'm so shaky with all the Valiant characters. Like, I want to like them, but I somewhere deep down in me is that image 12-year-old that bears a grudge against Valiant and all the Wizard articles talking about how smart and well-written Valiant is. And I'm like, well, they're not cool. They don't look cool.
They don't look cool, right. The coloring is washed out and watercolory bullshit.
They don't have Todd McFarlane drawing any of that stuff. They're fucking lame.
They don't come out 10 months late.
That's cool.
All their anatomy's correct. Fuck these guys.
Fuck these guys.
Yep, yep. Trust me, Ian, I was Team Image as well. 12-year-old Matt was
Team Image.
But I'll tell you what.
Now you're Valiant Matt.
Image does not exist as we knew them when we were 12. It's not that company at all anymore.
It's still,
they may as well change their name.
It's still the logo, though, man. It's like you're rooting for a sports team. And I know I hate that stuff. But somewhere deep down in me, when I read a Valiant book, I'm like, yeah.
You know what I'm rooting for? I'm rooting for the characters. And those characters that Valiant has today are more in line with what we were reading when we were 12, Ian.
I agree with you.
Eternal Warrior's coming back this year in a series called Incursion. I recommend everybody to check these Valiant books out because what's cool is you can dip in and dip out because they're all limited series. They're all good jumping on points whenever they relaunch one of the series. Even though I don't like this kind of numbering, Ian, I prefer legacy numbering, as you know. As everyone knows. As you, dear listener, you know it. But in spite of that, they do make it accessible to jump in and out of these titles. So, looking forward to that.
Are they still making the Valiant Universe movie at some point? Or was that like a hoax?
It was the Valiant... It was Ninjak versus the Valiant Universe. I think they decided not to release it.
It looked bad.
I think what happened was another company bought Valiant or something, and they basically got them into like big budget real movies, and then they started making this one with Vin Diesel, and they're like, let's let this be our entry into like live action entertainment, because this is not like, if they would have released that Ninjak thing, you're probably looking at like the equivalent of the original Fantastic Four movie or the original Captain America movie.
Was the Ninjak thing the one with Jason David Frank as Bloodshot?
Yeah.
There's
it looked,
no
it looked good for like a little webisode.
That's
thing.
What it looked like. It looked like a web series or something like that. And honestly,
which is what it was. What it was.
Yeah. Like, there's no reason why Valiant, the style of the characters, the quality of their stories, there's no reason why they can't have like a regular big blockbuster release.
Right.
You give somebody $25 million, $20 million, and you could probably have a pretty decent movie that makes about, I don't know, maybe makes that back, makes $35, $40 million. So, I don't know. I'm glad that they held up on that and they're looking to do more quality big budget stuff.
I am too. And with that said, the first movie that's coming out from them comes out next year, comes out in about a year. It's going to come out on February 21st, 2020. It's the Bloodshot movie starring Vin Diesel.
Exhaust field trip.
And
fuck yeah.
We're probably going to get a trailer this year for it, I would think. I mean, later in
the
year, obviously.
Where he talks about how important the Valiant family is.
What?
There's a joke for all you Fast and Furious fans out there.
Because in every Fast and Furious movie, Matt, as you know, pretty much all Vin Diesel talks about is family, family first, and shit like that.
No, I didn't know that, actually. I've never seen... I'm proud to say I've never seen a Fast and Furious movie.
Shame on
you. And I'm more proud to say I will never see a Fast and Furious movie.
That's him. Valiant and stubborn, Matt Cassell, ladies and gentlemen.
You think I'm stubborn? I don't know.
I think there are 200 plus episodes.
Don't wink at me.
To prove that we are all our own different kind of stubborn.
You know, like, I saw, like, some of the shots from the Jason David Frank Valiant thing, and now, Matt, you're like, yeah, they're putting that on the shelf. And I'm like, that's probably a good idea. So why aren't they putting the DC app's Doom Patrol on the shelf?
Because is it bad?
That looks terrible. That looks like the three of us made a paper mache Robot Man helmet and stuck it on Brendan Fraser. Like, yeah.
It looks weird.
It looks so now, that's bad. All, that's not I've only a costume
seen,
or
I've
character.
Only seen paparazzi stuff. It looks weird.
You didn't see the trailer?
No.
There's like a weird, like, there's a trailer, like a teaser trailer, I guess. But, like, Robot Man looks so, so bad.
But it's faithful, isn't it? Like, from what I can see.
It's very faithful.
Like, Robot Man is kind of a weird design, and he's kind of corny as shit looking.
Yeah, but it doesn't look good. I feel like there's certain things that the CW
well,
shows.
Well, how would you do Robot Man? I'm watching it right now.
I wouldn't. I'd look at this. I'd look at every version of this and be like, we can't do this faithfully. There's certain ways, I think, where the CW DC shows excel is that they pick and choose things they can do, and then they pick and choose things they can dedicate budget toward. Like, they were like, we're going to do one episode in Gorilla City, but that's the rest of our budget. No one gets paid for 6 months. And they do it, and it looks really good. Asterisk on a TV budget. That's for you, Matt.
I appreciate it. Thanks. They did
King Shark a couple times. Looked amazing. But once again, no one's getting paid for months after that. Like, I think they really pick and choose what they can use. They know how far they can go and to keep things realistic, to keep things looking professional. This Robot Man helmet looks so bad. And, like, I see what the fuck is his name? Who drew the recent Doom Patrol that's so good with drawing? Nick Darrington. I see Nick Darrington, like, holy shit, like, they're really faithful. You know, go to our
it
stuff,
is faithful,
go Doom Patrol.
But
and I'm like, no, Nick Darrington. And I know he can't be like, this looks like dog shit, because he'll never work for DC again. But
well, it is faithful to the way that Nick Darrington draws, but Nick Darrington is a, you know, kind of stylized, Bruce Timmy kind of.
Yeah, but, like,
drawing.
This is a, like, it should be better.
I think, like, you could do that, but you would need to do it in, like, to do Doom Patrol properly, you have to have like a Hellboy kind of budget. Like, you have to have an effects department like that to be able to do this.
I think, all right, it's a robot head. It doesn't move. Like, well, I guess his mouth
should move. It doesn't move when he's talking there.
But DC well, I think Universe. Those are all. I think it's all voiceover, so it shouldn't talk there.
It is, but I'm saying, like,
in the comics, it moves.
It should move.
But even if it doesn't move, I get it. That's fine. But it looks like we made a paper mache robot head and painted it metallic gold.
Well, all this DC Universe stuff, save for the Young Justice, or is it Young Justice? Yeah, the Outsider stuff that they're doing. Like, that's cool because they already did that before someplace else. But everything else that I've seen kind of looks like fucking crap. So
it's all very, but mostly very faithful. And I get it. Like, fans want faithful
adaptations.
So
you haven't gotten, none of us have gotten this app yet. Like, I wanted to get it.
I tested it.
You tested it. You didn't like it.
Well, there was no content out for it yet except for the stuff that already
back
existed,
catalog,
right? The
stuff.
Back catalog, in the comics in particular, were nothing to write home about. Like, it was a lot of comics, but, like, compared to the, you know, the
it was a curated list,
well, and you
right,
yeah. And I don't even understand why they put any comics on there, because this past week, Comixology Unlimited now has access to all the a select bunch of DC things. So I just don't understand their gameplay.
That was the weird thing, because Marvel's like, hey, read whatever you want.
Yeah.
And DC's like, here's Watchmen. But just the first six issues.
Yeah, but
that's the great thing.
But Marvel's not giving you like all the other shit. They're not giving you all their shows and their movies.
But I think it's that Marvel Unlimited, that's not mass media targeted. That's targeted at us.
Yeah.
Like people like us will buy it.
True.
Because we want to read old shit or things that we've never read. And that's what I thought the promise of DC Unlimited or whatever it was fucking called. DC All Access, or
DC Universe.
That was the promise that I was like, oh my God, I can't wait, because growing up, I was never a DC person. So I didn't read any of that stuff, but I always wanted to go back and check all that stuff out. Whenever I ask for gifts for Christmas, it's always DC graphic novels because I didn't read a lot of that stuff. So I thought this would be a great way for me to dive into the universe. And they're like, just a tip.
Did you get a DC Comics graphic novel for Christmas this year?
Let me think. Let me think about it.
Okay.
Talk amongst yourselves.
So, Paul, I got to tell you, man, I think the Doom Patrol, like, I just watched that little trailer. Yeah, it looks kind of cheesy, but, like, isn't that what the Doom Patrol sort of is, with the young animal imprint, at least? Like, it is kind of cheesy.
Yeah, but it's not cheesy in a low production quality kind of way.
Well, yeah, admittedly, but there's...
And I don't...
It doesn't look that bad. Like, I mean, let's see it in some kind of context.
I love the Keith Giffen run of Doom Patrol.
Keith Giffen?
Immensely.
I think Keith Giffen is such a good ensemble cast writer.
Yeah. And I love this Gerard Way, Nick Darrington run immensely. I thought they're both very different books, but I thought they were both excellent. But that fucking Cliff Steele, that Robot Man head in this trailer, I'm like, oh man, like the eyes.
I know.
It just looks like just like clear plastic put up in the eye holes. Like, come on.
It could be better.
You gotta be better.
It could be better. I think it could be better. Matt, real quick, yes, I did. I got Absolute Batman the Killing Joke for Christmas.
Oh, cool.
You fucking mark.
What? I fucking like that book. What do you want?
Coming from the most mainstream person I've ever met in my life.
I own that book. It was one of the first ones that I ever read, like, over my cousin's house. Calm the fuck down.
I own that book. I think, like, as soon as...
So are you a mark? Does that make you a mark?
I don't love it, nor would I want the Absolute Edition. But I think as soon as you're like, I'm going to read comic books, someone shows up and they're like, here's your complimentary issue of The Killing Joke.
Is that what they do? Happened to you?
It's like when you grow up in Carrick, Pennsylvania, as soon as you graduate high school, you get a Chevy Cavalier.
I would disagree with that.
But what would you, if you were comic czar and someone said, I want to read comic books, and then there's a knock at the door and it's Paul McGinty, comic czar, and what would you give them?
What mainstream piece of
schlock would you give them?
That's such a big question. I'm in no way prepared to answer that right off the top of my head. Do you have something?
I know what you'd give them, bitch.
What do you think I'd give them?
Rebirth. Green Lantern Rebirth.
Oh my God, do I love that book. It's so good.
It would be a quality title to give somebody too.
Yeah, it's a really good book, but like,
I don't think there's any one size fits all kind of thing to give anybody. That would be good, but
Ian, what would you got to do it though?
Ultimate Spider-Man.
Whew, all
of it or just the first trade?
The first trade.
Man,
I'm not gonna
give him the entire round.
Bring it in. Bring it in.
Beep. Beep. Just the first 25 trades until they kill Peter Parker, and then you don't need to read anymore. Then they put some black kid in the suit and it doesn't count.
Never mind that. But Mr. Comics on Sharply, I saw that new movie. Ignore that new movie because this is the real stuff.
Spider-Man's a really good answer. That might be a really good answer.
I want to come up with my own answer, but I don't think I can beat that. That's probably the one.
You know what? I'd probably give them The Long Halloween.
That's a good one. That's a good pick. It's probably something that they're familiar with from the animated series, that like the vibe of the animated series.
And they're quintessential versions of all the Batman characters, all the villains.
Is Joker in that? Joker's yeah. not in that, is yeah. he?
They're all
I don't
in
remember.
It. Huh. Yeah, I would pick the Long Halloween. Yeah.
That's would you get Absolute Long Halloween? Do you have it?
I have Absolute you fucking Long Mark. Halloween. Ah! Matt, do you have any of the Absolute titles?
Uh-uh.
I have a handful of Absolute books. I have Rebirth. I've got Sinestro War. I got New Frontier.
You have Absolute New Frontier. That's
yeah,
it.
New Frontier.
That's one that I've been looking for, but I can't find it for a reasonable price anywhere. I think I only have two. I have Absolute Watchmen, and I have Absolute Killing Joke.
And I have Long Halloween, and it's not technically Absolute because it's Dark Horse, but I have Hellboy Seed of Destruction. Mm-hmm. Those are really nice looking books because it's a like fabric hardback.
Ooh. Well, Dark Horse, all of their
they're like John Hammond, spare no expense.
Oh, and they spare a lot of expense on their regular graphic novels because every single Hellboy trade that I have like comes apart at the seams. So
that's
I have
what
to
said
re-
before.
Yeah, man, I don't know what it is. So
they're
I'm
possessed.
Gonna have to rebuy all of them. They might be. Like I might need some.
A friend of mine was telling me
which my books.
He was telling me that Amazon was having a huge fucking sale on their trade paperbacks on Hellboy. So keep an eye out because they may, you know, do something like that again. Maybe they have to liquidate.
Are we excited about the new Hellboy? That's.
I saw the trailer. I saw the trailer, and I was really struggling with his look.
too much hair, huh?
Yeah, well, I don't understand why it's not pulled back the way it's supposed to be. It's like, you guys are going to all the trouble, you painted him red, you put the horns on, but you forgot to tie his hair back. Like, I don't get it.
I feel like they went through the entire suit creation, all of the prosthetics, all of the makeup for David Harbour, and they finished it, and they stepped back, and they were like, oh, this looks just like
exactly.
Ron Perlman.
Right.
How do we differentiate this now? And then someone was like, all we can do is put his hair down.
Yeah, it looks so much like Ron Perlman to the point where I'm like, why'd they recast? Like, can we just have Old Man Hellboy? Like, that would be fine. I wouldn't care about that.
Yeah,
under the prosthetics, you can't tell that Ron Perlman would be older.
I think,
who would give a fuck?
I think his hairline is a lot closer to the horns, too.
It is. Like, it's like a widow's peak through
the
horns, kind
of. Hellboy's real hair starts, like, on the crown of his head. Like, it's back.
Right.
It's back on his head. But is, like... He's got, man, has he got a lot of hair?
He looked.
Maybe this is a younger Hellboy.
Ron Perlman looked better, I think.
I think he did too. And he also looked like.
I think if we see this hair pulled up, that could be all the difference.
David Harbour looks like a monster, whereas Ron Perlman kind of looked like a human a little bit, you know? Maybe because Ron Perlman has monstrous features that they're just adding to a little bit. But I don't know. I'm pretty excited. I like Hellboy a lot.
This is supposed to be a darker take. I didn't even get that from the trailer, really.
No,
like,
I didn't get
Moni playing throughout the trailer.
Yeah. I mean, like, I'm going to see it, but, like, the trailer didn't do a lot for me.
What's cool about it, like, the Hellboy movie history for me, anyhow. Like, I'm a huge Hellboy fan. I own every Hellboy comic book and some trade paperback form upstairs. The first movie was really good, really faithful. The second movie was just like Guillermo del Toro and Mike Mignola doing whatever they wanted. And it got a little silly, a little crazy. I think it got too weird.
Well,
del Toro had too much leash.
It felt more like instead of using the reference of the books, Guillermo del Toro was like, oh, I got a lot of great ideas in my sketchbook and my horror mansion or whatever the fuck he's got going on. And they used more of his ideas than the stuff that actually came. And that's fine. His aesthetic is great for those movies. But let's stick with the source material. There's so much to pick from.
Yeah,
just pick from
it. And this one looks like it's really pulling from the book mythology. Ben Damio is going to be in it. His Irish girlfriend, whose name I forget, is going to be in it. Like, I think there's going to be a lot of later Hellboy mythology used. And I'm really excited about
that
seeing.
First movie was totally pulled right out of the comic.
Oh, it's fantastic.
The first movie nailed it. It was so good.
The second movie,
the bit where he's carrying around like the half of a corpse and it's talking to him and complaining the whole time.
Yeah.
It's right out of those fucking pages. Like that's the exact tone and like humor that a Hellboy movie should have.
Yeah, that first movie was on, I think last week it was, they were playing it, and I mean, every time that movie, my wife really likes that movie. Every time Hellboy comes on, we have to watch it to the end. She really enjoys it. So, yeah, I recently watched from like the midway point to the end of Hellboy, and so good. I really like that film.
Paul, did you ever read the Hellboy crossover with Savage Dragon?
I don't think that I did.
Savage Dragon number 35 and 36. No, missed that one.
I didn't make it that far into my Savage Dragon.
They fight this big monster. This is really funny. They fight this really big giant monster, and he gobbles him up. And Hellboy and Savage Dragon have to crawl through the monster, and they come out of his ass.
Oh, Eric Larson.
I know, right?
Yeah,
I thought that shit was so good when I was 19 years old. I was like, tells me
Mike Mignola didn't write that.
Mike Mignola was a consultant on it because he wanted to make sure that
Hellboy was represented in the best light coming out of the sphincter of some monster.
So there's some other things that I wanted to discuss, Paul. We were briefly talking about like these web series, like that Ninjak thing. And how, you know, look good for like a web series, but if this is going to be your first foray into live entertainment with your brand, probably not the best first impression. But I wanted to give a shout out to I'm not a big like fan film person. Like usually that stuff isn't worth our time because, you know, it's fan film shit. But there is a Star Wars fan film called Vader Shards of the Past. Did you guys see that?
I did see that.
And it's going to be a whole series, I guess. It was by the dude. I had been listening to this guy's YouTube channel. He would like, he said he had inside sources and he would tell you what, you know, like things that he was hearing about episode 8 and shit. And it, like, none of it turned out to be true. I was kind of into his channel. I thought the production value on it was pretty high, and I was like, okay, cool. And he was always talking about the end of every one of his videos. He'd be like, and I'm still working on my Vader fan film, and I'm like, yeah, that's going to suck. And so it finally came out, and goddamn if it wasn't pretty good.
Yeah, it was.
It was a cut above all other fan films I've ever seen.
It was all right. It was good. A lot of the voice acting was solid.
I mean, it wasn't perfect, but it was solid.
Yeah, what
for a fan film?
What I can't get over is the really tiny window in like the Emperor's office. Like it's you know the kind of like triangular, like why can't I think of the name of the shape? I can never think of the name of the shape.
Watching you do magic fingers is drawing the shape.
It's the shape.
Is, like,
how many sides?
It's four sides. It's
pentagon.
No, it's behind.
It's behind the goal
on an ice rink.
Trapezoid.
It's the trapezoid. Yeah, it's the trapezoidal windows that they have in the Star Destroyers and stuff. But like it's like the basement window. It's so tiny. It's so little. And I'm like, ugh. Like every time I see it, like I think that particular set design is what makes that suffer the most. The costumes look great. The voice actors sound good. All the effects, like the, you know, lightsabers and the laser blasts and everything, all that stuff looked really neat. But the set design just, Every time, it just pulled me right out of it.
Well, yeah, I mean, again, fan film don't have the budget for the giant set pieces. I mean, yeah, the guy filmed it in his basement. There's going to be a basement window in there, but you know, I give him credit for. I don't think he's making money on it. He's probably going to do is parlay it into a job working for Lucasfilm or something.
Isn't
but.
That how a few of the directors that got big films got attached to? The guy I'm thinking of is the guy who did Fantastic Four that I can't remember his name right now.
Josh Trank
did a, didn't he do a Star he Wars did. Fan film?
He did.
And that kind of like made way for him to possibly be in line for other bigger actual projects.
He made
projects.
Chronicle. And then they were like, dude, you're going to do a Star Wars, but first do the Fantastic Four. You're amazing.
Well, I think he, even before he did Chronicle, he had some like handheld, like Princess Leia at a party kind
no,
of
no,
thing.
No, that's what I'm talking about. That right? That's what got him the Chronicle job.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
The job at the Chronicle. And then he turned that into a Star Wars gig, but first Fantastic Four, which killed his Star Wars gig. And we have
as we all predicted here on the Mixos Comic Book Podcast.
We have not heard of Josh Trank since the Fantastic Four debacle.
Josh Trank is in the tank.
But didn't we all agree that Josh Trank's Fantastic Four movie was pretty good until someone steamrolled the second half of it?
I thought that we agreed that the tone was cool. I think the thing that killed Josh Trank's career, if it is indeed dead, is his reaction prior to the release of the film, where he went on Twitter and said, "This isn't the film that I wanted," and blah 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 blah. Like, yeah, so that kind of killed the box office.
You know, it's funny that he acknowledged my movie was not good, but he tried to like deflect blame on the other people, the studio.
There are definitely bits and pieces that were good that you could tell he filmed.
Whereas Rian Johnson of Star Wars Episode 8 fame won't own any shortcomings of the movie and blames the fans. And that landed him his very own Star Wars trilogy. So Josh Trank, you totally
Does
took the wrong approach.
Does he still have that? That seems so implausible that they would do that.
I don't think it's going to happen. I think it's impossible for it to happen. I almost feel like Disney maybe is hoping people will forget about it. Here's what I think is really happening. He's got a movie coming out in the next year or so. I think they're going to wait and see how that does. And if it's a flop, then they're probably going to say, you know what, dude, we're not going to move forward with your thing. Our future is in television, which brings me to another point.
Since Solo, the Benioff Weiss, their Star Wars trilogy, it's been awful quiet on that front too.
Well, it has been, but the Game of Thrones guys are still moving forward, according to
our resident Star Wars expert. Matt Cassell?
According
Star Wars
to
Bar Cassell?
The whispers in the cantinas. Far, far in the outer rim.
The president of Disney, what's his name? Bob Iger.
Darth Iger.
I believe it's pronounced Ije.
He said something to the effect of they're still moving forward with that and some television projects back when he basically said, hey, look, after the flop that was Solo, he said, we're going to kind of pause on these spinoff movies and we're going to take a much more measured approach. The Game of Thrones guys are still developing their thing, but he conspicuously failed to mention the Rian Johnson trilogy. Now, somebody did ask Rian Johnson like on Twitter if that was still happening, and he replied and said yes. So, I don't know. I expect
to take a big shit on Star Wars again. Sure am. This one will probably be great because he's so good at subverting expectations.
Right, so everybody thinks it's going to be terrible, and then
we're going to be like, damn it, this was really good. He got us again!
So, a couple other movies that I'm looking forward to, obviously the new Star Wars. Doesn't the Mandalorian TV show come out this year too? Isn't that going to launch alongside of the Disney app?
I thought so. So when is the Disney app planned?
In the fall,
right?
August?
Am I making that up? I don't know.
It sounds right. Either
August
the fall or late summer sounds right.
Anyway,
I feel like the fall would be like when they could film, do effects work, put it all together.
I will tell you what, guys. Like, I'm legitimately excited for that. I think it's going to be really cool. Yeah. I love the separate app.
Holy shit.
I love the talent involved in this. I like the main actor. I love Jon Favreau. I think he's going to totally hook it up. It's not like Disney went up to him and was like, hey, come on, pitch us a really cool Star Wars show. He went to them and he's like, I have this cool idea. You guys let me make this. And they let him. And it's going to be cool. Dave Filoni's involved in it. Like, all the right people are working on it. It takes place in an unexplored time that we desperately want to know about, which is the years right after Return of the Jedi. It's going to be cool.
You heard it here first.
Wow. Speaking of August.
Put that on the blurb.
Matt TV Cassad.
It's going to be cool.
That's my middle name.
Streaming Cassad.
Television.
Just like the whatchamacallit, it's going to be cool.
So first day, you're going to be like, Disney Plus... plus my money.
Yeah, that's right.
Here's my wallet. Go ahead.
So, see, you know,
like I'm way more likely to sign up for the Disney app to watch The Mandalorian than I was for Titans or Doom Patrol. Like, I mean, those do nothing for me, and I love those properties, but it just, whatever DC is giving me, it doesn't look like it's going to be worth it. But Mandalorian looks interesting. I trust everyone involved. I like the cast that they're putting together so far. You know, yeah, I think Mandalorians are fucking beat, and I don't need another fucking version of Boba Fett. But everyone involved seems to know what they're doing. They know how to handle the Star Wars universe. So I'm going to be in.
It's, and I love that they're calling it The Mandalorian. It's not called Star Wars The Mandalorian. Like, it feels like it's made for people like us that know this universe and know this property beyond
the Luke man, Scott. The what? Right. Who does he Lorian?
I can't wait till
I think my uncle drove one of those in the 80s.
I can't wait till some fucking gearhead turns on the show and he's like, what the fuck? Star Wars? thought this was Top Gear.
Hey, so that's going to launch in August. Guess what I just read is coming out in August? What movie? You're not going to guess.
Thanks for giving us this chance.
I guess we're not.
Okay, Paul,
I guess we could look at IMDb and be like, all right, which movie would this fucking nerd like in August?
That's going to take for long. Matt wants us to have this queued up already. Like, we're his fucking movie jukebox.
Ian's looking.
I'm seeing if I can.
You want to wait? Keep the listeners waiting?
Paul would stall Baywatch him a little 2. Bit longer.
It's not Baywatch 2.
Is it Chapter 2?
No, but I'm really looking forward to that, too. That comes out in September.
Is it the Downton Abbey movie?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Ian, no, you have not. One more guess.
Well, The Fast and Furious presents Hobbs and Shaw. Matt, tell me.
The Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
This is news to me. This is breaking news for me. Ian, did you know they were making a Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark movie?
I did not.
Is that what they're calling
IMDb
it?
IMDb also did not know this.
Actually, it's funny because that's where I got my information from IMDb, so I don't know.
Maybe we have two different apps.
Yeah, maybe you're on IMDC. I don't know, but on IMDb, Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, August 9th, 2019.
In theaters?
I don't know.
Are you sure?
Maybe I made the whole thing up.
I hope this is a fever dream.
I'm pretty sure.
I'm just saying it's not on IMDb.
A group of kids face their fears in order to save their town. There's a picture of Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah.
On here.
So haunted.
Oh, Dean Norris is the only actor that is recognizable. Maybe October 29th. Nope, that was update. That's the update date. There's director is Andre Overdahl.
Okay, it looks like in
Matt, is this just coming out in Spain?
I don't know.
Why is Pinocchio in the? Are you guys seeing that?
Yeah, I don't know that either.
August 9th, 2019, USA.
This feels like a ruse.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's like, I don't know. I trust Dean Norris.
Sure.
Alvin Schwartz's Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, Hopefully Stephen Gammell is a visual consultant on the film. But it's a step in the right direction to have Guillermo del Toro involved, who is a visual visionary, if you will.
Oh, the old double V.
Or a W, as some people call it.
Jesus Christ.
So that's another one. I think I'm looking forward to it. I mean,
if
I'm intrigued.
It actually is indeed real and an English language property.
Or maybe I have to go to Spain to watch it. So yeah, the It movie's coming. I also saw there's a Masters of the Universe movie coming at the end of the year. What is happening?
I saw that. I think that got pushed. I saw that the other day. Somebody, loyal listener to the show, Joe Saxman, was talking to me about this. And I looked at him like he had many faces because I had not I had not heard anything about this. So I guess there's rumor of this. There's no casting. There's no fucking crew.
They haven't started it yet. They're like,
yeah, no. They're just like, we're gonna slap.
We'll start making it in October. We'll be out in December.
So I don't know, but I have seen
this.
Word of this. So I don't know.
They just got a new screenwriter for it. This is nothing that's coming out this year.
There's no way.
It was as recent as like 2 weeks ago. It was on IMDb listed for like December. I think it's been pushed.
Masters of the Universe reboot wants Men in Black reboot writers to find the power of Grayskull. So this isn't anything yet. This is just the owners of the IP saying, hey, we like these guys. They've been trying to push a Masters of the Universe movie for years. It's had a ton of different people attached to it. It always falls through. My guess is just because there's too many cooks in the kitchen. But do we really want a
Masters of the Universe movie? Or maybe it's not that good. Maybe He-Man just ain't a property that can be updated. Maybe it would have to change too much in order for it to be a viable thing.
I don't know. I don't think so. I think that. But I mean, I'm biased because I really love Masters.
No, you loved it. You loved it.
Yes.
If it were to be created as faithfully to the original material, you probably wouldn't like it very much.
You don't think so? Why do you say that?
Because we've all tried to watch the old episodes. They're unwatchable.
Well, I mean, it doesn't have to be blow for blow quite as homoerotic as it was back in the day. I mean, I'll just take a little bit of bumping and grinding. I mean, it doesn't have to be that explicit.
Hey, there ain't nothing wrong.
Man, the other day, somebody was talking about R. Kelly, and they didn't know what was going on with R. Kelly. And I was like, kind of fucked a bunch of little girls, has a sex cult, and they're like, I still like the music. And I said,
oh, is that like a real thing?
That's a real thing.
I'd heard about it a long time ago.
That's a real thing. He has a sex cult. He married younger girls in their teens, like has abused a lot of people.
Is he like on trial now or something?
He's slow walking a trial. Like he waived his right for a speedy trial as a legal tactic so that his accusers would come on the stand when they're older so that he wouldn't have a lot of like 16-year-old girls on the stand. It would visually look better for him. So this trial has been delayed for about 7-8 years, something like that. And somebody was talking about, oh, I still like the music, I still love listening to the music. And I was like, all right, I'm gonna read the lyrics to some of these songs out loud and remember that he's writing this about a 12-year-old girl. And instantly a bunch of people out.
Bump and
Grind was the one that I read, but I mean, he has
God
some
damn it, R. Kelly.
Real crazy just titles to his songs. Feeling on Your Booty, Let's Go Half on a Baby. Like,
yeah. Nothing wrong with that.
A lot of weird stuff. So, sorry, R. Kelly tangent. Done.
Wow.
What do you think R. Candy's favorite candy bar is?
R. Candy? It's definitely R. Candy.
What's R. Candy's favorite Kelly bar?
That's going to do it for us tonight. My name is Paul McGinty.
Ian Sharpley.
Milky Way Casale.
We'll see you next time.